Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm so happy to be here with all of you today. I have a great show planned. Sumia Khan and Amelia Reese Masterson will be joining me. And they are part of City Seed and Sanctuary Kitchen in New Haven, Connecticut, and I'm going to tell you more about that in a little bit when they come on. But first, I want to tell you about some things going on in and around the news, some ways that you might want to get involved, and, of course, share my weekly recipe with you. So this week on my newsletter, I shared with many of you who get my newsletter, which you can sign up for at iegreen.com, that I lost a friend this past week, and it was really... It was very shocking to our whole community because this is someone we loved and it was unexpected. And it just, you know, kind of once again jolts you into looking at things from a different perspective and really stopping and taking in everything that you have to be thankful for. And with this time of year of Thanksgiving coming up, it just really shook me and made me stop to smell the roses. You know, I have so many things in my life to be thankful for, and so many of us do. And we need to take a moment and be thankful and, you know, think of ways that we can, you know, make those connections that we have more real and deeper and reach out to those that might be in need and hurting and ways that we can give back. And this is also the time of year where I organize a huge community event to give back to those that are in need who live around Rufus King Park in Jamaica, Queens. And it's a big event that starts, it starts at my home in Old Westbury, the weekend, you know, next weekend actually. It's coming up really quick. It starts on Saturday, November 23rd, and we cook all the way until Tuesday morning, November 26th. And then we serve lunch to anywhere from 700 to 1,000 people in the park in Queens. And they just finished renovating the park. We've been serving, this will be our 25th year, and we have been serving in the park for the last 4 years or so, you know, changing our spot, working around the construction that was going on in the park, and they finally finished the construction. I hear the park looks beautiful, and now they don't want to give us a permit, if you can believe it. Now that it's a beautiful park and, you know, the neighborhood's getting regentrified, they don't want those in need in the park. And so we're working hard to try to get that permit secured for next week. Otherwise, we will have food for 1,000 with nowhere to bring it to. I'm sure we will find shelters and places to bring the food, but it's not, you know, I don't want to stop this event because it, as I've said in the video that just came out on YouTube called Thanksgiving Back, which you can all look up on YouTube or find on my website, this has been going on for 25 years, and it's a well-greased engine, and it, you know, brings together so many people in the community who get a lot out of just the act of giving back. And so we all can benefit from participating in ways to volunteer, and I encourage you all to do that. Check out the video on Thanksgiving Back. It's really quite moving. And I would like to share with you some ways that you can take action. This Thanksgiving, you might want to consider purchasing a turkey from a local sustainable farm instead of just going and buying an industrial-raised turkey. You know, every year we, you know, millions of turkeys are, 46 million turkeys actually will be consumed, they say, this Thanksgiving, and 22 million more will be eaten on Christmas. But 85 to 90% of them come from industrial factory farms, and those birds are pumped with GMOs and antibiotics, and it's just not a great system. Our industrial food system has a lot to be desired, and so if you can support a local farmer who's raising the turkeys in a much better way, giving them a life that's at least worth living until they are slaughtered, it would be better. So check out farms in your local area. Eat Wild is a great resource, and Local Harvest. Both of them will tell you where you can find local farms. I've listed some here on Long Island on my website if you want to check that out. And I wrote about the chocolate deforestation connection this week in my newsletter, as well as the problem with food deserts and that issue spreading across America. It used to be just poor neighborhoods in cities that had or were described as food deserts, you know, where predominantly African American and Hispanic communities, you can get lots of fast food, but try to get a fresh tomato, you can't do it. And it's a big problem. But now that problem is not only in cities of lower income neighborhoods, it is also in communities across the country, small towns that are dwindling in population, partly because they don't have grocery stores. These are towns where there's farmland all around, and they're raising some of the food for our country, and yet they have no access to food because the supermarket can't afford to stay in a town with a small population. So these communities are starting to fight back and coming together and are, you know, starting community groceries. And it's kind of a nice story, and yet at the same time, it's a very serious concern for those communities that are in limbo right now and have not gotten a grocery store together yet. They have to travel. They could have to travel half an hour to an hour just to get a fresh vegetable. And that's just a big problem, especially if we're trying to attract young people to stay in these communities or move to these communities. So really interesting articles. Check them out in the news on my website at iegreen.com. Some things coming up in and around the area that you might want to take, that you might want to participate on. Climate Wednesdays continue at the Brooklyn Library. Coming up on November 20th, the theme is Parenting in the Age of Climate Change. These are free events from 7 to 8:30 in the evening. And then the next one is on December 11th, which is the Green New Meal, and that's the Food Climate Connection. And that will also be at the Brooklyn Public Library, also free from 7 to 8:30. And the December 11th date, I will be moderating a panel. And, you know, the colleagues that will be on that panel are all great. Nancy Romer, Onika Abraham, and Elizabeth Henderson. All amazing women that know so much about climate change and the food connection. So I hope you can join us for that. Next weekend, November 20th, conversations about food up in Boston with Food Tank. You know, they're continuing their conversations about food. That will be at the Friedman School of Nutrition and Policy, and that's a free event. And then the Biodynamic Conference will be going on also November 20th to the 24th up in Lake George. If you haven't signed up for that and are interested, please do. There's also sign-ups for volunteering for this Thanksgiving event that I'm doing for next weekend. I think most of the spots on the weekend are free, are open, and you can sign up there. And then I'm doing it again for Christmas. I have a volunteer opportunity for a Christmas community dinner that I do, and that will be from Sunday, December 15th through the 17th. And then please save the date for NOFA New York's Winter Conference. NOFA is the Northeast Organic Farming Association. And there's NOFAs in all of the New England states. And this is our biggest event. This year it will be moving to Syracuse. So stay tuned for more information about that. And now I want to share with you my recipe. It's a quick one this week. As many of you know, I'm the farm-to-school coordinator for Glen Cove City Public Schools, and every month I am introducing a new vegetable to the kids, the 3,200 kids in the district. And so this week I am doing roasted beet salad, and because the custodians would kill me if I used red beets, I'm using golden beets, and Kyoja beets. Kyoja beets are the beets that are red and white spiral, and they're beautiful, and they don't stain. So it's pronounced Kyoja, but it's spelled C-H-I-O-G-G-I-A, beets. And very simple. I started with 8 beets, a quarter cup of balsamic vinegar, a quarter cup of olive oil, 1 teaspoon mustard, 2 tablespoons orange juice, which just sweetens it up a little bit for the kids, and then salt and pepper to taste. For the kids, I don't even bother with the pepper. I'm just putting on a little bit of salt. I roasted the beets until they're soft. That takes about 50 to 60 minutes. I wrapped the beets in aluminum foil to keep the juices inside. And lots of people said they boil their beets, and you can do that, but when you boil the beets, so much of the flavor and color comes out. So by roasting it, you really keep all those nutrients and flavor right in there. Once they are roasted, you can let them cool just a little bit so you can handle them, and then you're going to peel them. And the skin at that point just comes right off. Really, really easy to peel them. You just take a little paring knife and just wipe the peels away, basically. Meanwhile, in a large bowl, I'm going to mix together the balsamic vinegar, the olive oil, the orange juice, and the mustard. Then I'm going to dice the beets into small bite-sized pieces and add the beets to the bowl of the dressing and let them marinate for about a half an hour before serving. And you can season them with the salt and pepper. And that is it. Super, super easy. So delicious. Everybody's loving it. So, when I say everybody's loving it, of course, that's once I get it onto their plate. Kids are funny, you know, and thank God the beets are beautiful, so it looks like a salad they want to try. So I get many kids trying it. But you have to make things look beautiful to get kids to try it. And some kids just will not budge. So those that are trying it are really enjoying it, and I hope you try it. And if you do, let me know. I love the feedback. So now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you two women that are really making a difference in their communities. Amelia Reese Masterson, she's the executive director of City Seed, and Sumia Khan is the co-founder of Sanctuary Kitchen. And City Seed's a nonprofit organization that seeks to provide all New Haven residents with access to fresh local food. And they also work to build economic opportunities in the food system for the residents and believe that a just food system is the foundation to a thriving community. And so in that light, they founded Sanctuary Kitchen to promote and celebrate the culinary traditions, cultures, and stories of refugees and immigrants that have resettled in Connecticut. And Amelia has worked over a decade at the intersection of food security, health, agriculture, and refugee services. She's worked with Iraqi and Syrian refugees across the Middle East on food security programming, in addition to spending time in New Haven, both earning a master's in public health and working in community-based food and nutrition services. And she sees food justice as central to the well-being of New Haven, and food as a vehicle for bringing community members together. And I've talked about that so much. Food really does bring people together. And Sumia is a registered dietitian and the kitchen program manager at City Seed, where she oversees Sanctuary Kitchen, cooking and food education and food business incubation. And she's the daughter of Indian immigrants and global justice activists, and is a California native that was raised in a diverse and multicultural community with a large immigrant and refugee population. And that started her passion for helping out. And Sanctuary Kitchen is the synthesis of her upbringing, work in social justice, and passion for food and nutrition. And I'm so happy to have both of them on. Are you both there?
Yes, we are. Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi. Welcome, Sumia and Amelia. I'm so happy to have you here. Maybe you can start, whichever one of you wants to start, with Sanctuary Kitchen's mission and purpose and what you do at Sanctuary Kitchen for everybody.
Sure. This is Sumia. So at Sanctuary Kitchen, we partner with immigrant and refugee chefs to build economic opportunity and authentic connections through food. And we do that through a couple different means. Our programming involves refugee and immigrant-led cooking classes, supper clubs, and other culinary events. This provides an opportunity for the chefs that we work with to earn some income, but also share their stories and their culture with the larger community. We also run a catering social enterprise that provides regular employment and professional development. You know, that both all of these programs allow for cultural exchange, income opportunities, you know, professional development with the focus on food and culinary history.
And how does that fit in with City Seed's larger mission?
Yeah, so this is Amelia. So City Seed is working with the community to build an equitable local food system, and that's focused on kind of three pillars, so around community development, economic development, and also sustainable agriculture. So Sanctuary Kitchen is one of the programs that we run under that mission, and I think it really does address sort of all three pillars of that mission, so particularly economic development. So we're helping you know, newcomers in our city to sort of overcome barriers to getting involved in the food industry, finding employment in the food industry, and also integrating into the community and sharing their cultural cuisine and stories with the wider community. So it's really a chance for learning, but also economic development. And so, yeah, City Seed also works closely with farmers across the state of Connecticut, and part of what Sanctuary Kitchen does is link up chefs to local farmers to be able to source locally for the dishes that are prepared within Sanctuary Kitchen. So Sanctuary Kitchen catering sources locally and has a presence at City Seed's farmers markets and helps support the mission that way as well.
City Seed runs their own farmers market?
Yeah, so City Seed runs farmers markets. We have 5 across New Haven year-round. And then we also run a food business incubation. So we have a commercial kitchen, and we manage folks who want to start or grow a food business, linking those entrepreneurs with farmers and with our farmers markets.
Oh, great. Maybe we can just back up now just a little bit before I go on more to the actual communities you're working with. Can you each share a little bit of your background as to how you got involved with City Seed and Sanctuary Kitchen? And, a little bit about your story.
Sure. So my background...
Who's going first?
I'm sorry? Oh,
who's talking now?
And my background is I'm a, you know, registered dietitian, and I've been doing community and public health cooking education, nutrition education for some time. And so I've had this interest in food and education. And New Haven is a resettlement city. We have IRIS here, which is the Integrated
Refugee and Immigrant Services,
which is the frontline organization that resettles refugees in the greater New Haven area and also supports resettlement throughout the state. And then coupled that with New Haven also being a, you know, foodie city, it just made sense to start something where refugees and immigrants are featured through their food. And there had been, back in 2016, you know, before the current administration, the Syrian refugee crisis was kind of at its peak, as well as in Iraq and Afghanistan. And so there were, you know, over hundreds of refugees being resettled in Connecticut. And there were programs popping up around the world where refugees and immigrants were being highlighted, or their culinary histories were being highlighted, their cooking skills were being highlighted through various programs. And City Seed, with a focus on food and cooking education, had built out this new Teaching Kitchen. So we pooled together, City Seed, Iris, myself, to talk about, you know, starting something where refugees and immigrants were featured through their food. And then at that time, Amelia also joined on as a new ED, and we applied for a grant through the International Association of New Haven to kind of get off the ground with mm-hmm. Sanctuary Kitchen. And in 2017, Sanctuary Kitchen launched, and I joined City Seed formally as an employee.
And when was that? When did Sanctuary Kitchen start?
In April 2017. So, yeah, my background, this is Amelia, is coming from working in humanitarian settings and working on food systems and food security in refugee refugee camps and second countries where refugees were fleeing to. And so I've worked in community kitchens, worked with women, you know, working in cooking as a form of livelihood, especially in settings of transit or camp settings or urban settings. And I've just seen sort of the power of particularly women, but also, you know, women and men who have a background in culinary arts or a real interest in culinary arts being able to, be actualized by sharing their cuisine, especially in a setting where they are not in their home country. And also earning an income and developing skills to enter the workforce. So that's something that I sort of came from my previous work to New Haven with, and when I met Samaya and then the others in the community who were thinking about this work, it was really in alignment too with my background and sort of my vision. So yeah, it was cool to see all of us come together at a real opportune time and be able to launch this program that I think was really responsive to the community at the time.
And New Haven is a sanctuary city, is it not?
Yeah, so we are a sanctuary city in name. The mayor actually this year passed an executive order naming us as a sanctuary city, so employees of the city are not supposed to ask about immigration status or cooperate with ICE. We're still pushing to get that pushed through as an ordinance so that it can remain in place, you know, throughout mayoral transitions. But New Haven has been historically a pretty welcoming place for immigrants and refugees. We were the first city to have a citywide ID card, which, you know, is really helpful, particularly for the undocumented community. And, you know, there's a lot of activism in the city around deportation defense and immigrants' rights as well as refugees' rights. But we can do more, for sure. And there's still a lot of learning here that needs to happen as well.
Sure. And do you have to worry when you have events, do you have to worry about ICE coming in or anything like that? I mean, you know,
we haven't had that experience. I mean, that definitely is a possibility. I think there have definitely been ICE raids around the state recently. And there's a man who's currently in sanctuary at a church in New Haven, a man from Ecuador who's been there over a year now. So it's definitely a real threat. I'd say the majority of the participants in our program are refugees from Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Sudan, who don't face that threat, but that, you know, the program is open to anyone regardless of immigration status. And so, you know, we have program participants from 11 different countries, including Latin American countries, African countries, Asian countries.
And how large a community is it?
New Haven or the program?
No, how many immigrants are living in New Haven right now, or what percentage of the city would you say? Is it a large percentage?
Yeah, so for refugee resettlement, was it about 500 families per year up until the ban in 2017? And those numbers have dropped due to government policy. So now it's around 200 per year. And then last year, the number dropped even further. So from 330 in 2017 to 120 in 2018. So definitely resettlement is under threat right now. Immigration, I don't have the percent. It is a city with a large immigrant population from many different countries. So Ecuador, Mexico, Guatemala.
And is it integrated, or are they living all together, like in pockets?
There are some neighborhoods that are predominantly immigrant neighborhoods, but I'd say spread throughout the city.
Uh-huh. And the program focuses on authentic connections through food. So you celebrate culinary traditions and cultural exchange. Can you share with us what that process is like and what some of the challenges you've been finding are?
So through our culinary events, we run cooking classes, supper clubs, and other culinary events where we partner with other organizations or businesses to highlight the culinary skills of refugees and immigrants. And through all of those, we feature the chefs' cuisines and their recipes as they know them. So there are recipes that they've developed or they've learned from their mothers or grandmothers. During the event, during the cooking class, while they're teaching the recipe, or during the dinner, when you know the chefs and the guests are sitting together and enjoying the meal, there's opportunity for cultural exchange and the sharing of stories both ways. And we find you know that coming together over a meal is a very intimate experience. It's very genuine. And it's a comfortable space where these exchanges and these connections can form and occur. The whole idea of sanctuary kitchen is it's a safe place, it's a communal place, the settings are small and intimate, so there is that opportunity to really get to know each other. In detail, and we found through these events that relationships have developed, and then they go on beyond the event. So friendships are made, networking and connections in terms of if a guest has access or is involved with education or certain jobs, they're able to really connect the chefs that we work with. In various opportunities, whether it's helping their kids get into certain schools or helping them find jobs or housing, and so we see that real direct impact that the chefs benefit from, but also the guests benefit in terms of learning about new cultures, putting a face to a real human face and a human story to the headlines that they hear about in the news. It's not something abstract anymore when
you are
talking to.
And are the classes? I'm sorry. Are the classes small or hands-on, or are they more demo and a larger group? Because you're talking about an intimate group when you're sitting down. So are they all,
right.
Like 8 to 10, or are they more like 20, 25?
Yeah. Our cooking classes are about 14 to 15 people, and they're hands-on. Mostly hands-on. There's a little bit of demo. Part of it, but for example, on Saturday coming up, we have a cooking class on how to make Sudanese sambusa, which is a savory pastry with a meat or vegetable filling. So the chefs will demonstrate how to make the filling and the dough, but everybody will get to assemble and form them and cook them, and then it'll end with sitting together, enjoying the meal. The Sudanese chefs also do a beautiful smoked tea ceremony, so that'll be demonstrated and enjoyed by all the participants as well. And so we do those every month, and it's a really great way for the community and the chefs to get to know each other while they're preparing these authentic traditional dishes.
Uh-huh. And is that typical that you have these just once a month?
Yeah, we have about 3 to 4 events a month total. So one cooking class, one supper, and then maybe 1 to 2 events with other organizations. So last weekend, we partnered with Creative Arts Workshop here in New Haven. They had an exhibit on sanctuary cities, and it was called Sanctuary Cities and the Politics of the American Dream. And we collaborated on the closing reception by doing a tea and tradition event featuring tea cultures from around the world with tea tastings and demonstrations, and then also a really great panel discussion where both the Sanctuary Kitchen chefs from a couple different countries and the guests kind of shared about tea traditions from where they're from and the role tea gatherings plays in organizing, in community, in family. So we have quite a variety of events that we host throughout the year.
Lovely, lovely. You know, it's interesting you talk about all the different tea ceremonies and tea, you know, the different way different cultures enjoy tea, and the same with you just talked about the pastry cooking class, you know, and I was talking to someone else recently about this, how every culture seems to have their pastry, you know, some food item that they wrap in a pastry. And there's so many similarities in different foods from around the world, and it is just so wonderful to see you celebrating them and bringing people together. I'm going to suggest let's take our break right now, with just a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I really would like to talk about some of the connections and the opportunities that have been found for some of the refugees and immigrants that you've worked with and some of their stories. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Sumaya Khan and Amelia Reese Masterson from City Seed and Sanctuary Kitchen, and we'll be right back.
It's the Ralph Nader Radio Hour.
Stand up, stand up. You've been sitting way too long.
Every Thursday at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hey, it's Jesse, PRN station manager. I have an exciting announcement for our amazing listeners. PRN has a new voicemail line that will allow you to connect better with our hosts. If you can't listen live but have a question or comment for one of our hosts, just call 862-800-6805. That's 862-800-6805. This feature will allow your voice to be heard on your favorite PRN show.
Thank you for listening to the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. It's Beatie Confredos, host of the Ask Beatie Show. To Audio Now, the Progressive Radio Network now has an app. All you have to do is go to the App Store on your cell phone and search the Progressive Radio Network. You can listen live to PRN shows and also listen to past archive shows. So go to your App Store and download it right now.
This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and I'm the host of What Women Must Know every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. As a naturopathic doctor and psychotherapist, I am always seeking the latest solutions to help you rejuvenate and regenerate your body, mind, and spirit. So join me, Dr. Cheryl, and my inspiring guests, authors, health practitioners, and wise elders to empower yourself by expanding your knowledge about your health and your hormones and to gain fresh new perspectives on life. That's What Women Must Know every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm joined with Sumaya Khan and Amelia Ruth Masterson from City Seed and Sanctuary Kitchen. And we're talking about the immigrant and refugee communities that they work with and hearing about the work that they are doing. So, Amelia and Sumaya, can you share with us some of the stories of some of the refugees and immigrants that you have been working with, maybe some of your favorite chef classes that you've had, and then also ways that this class has then gone further and helped the life of these particular people?
Yeah. You were mentioning right before the break how many cultures have stuffed pastries. That's something we also picked up on through doing this work and put together a series actually last year, which was stuffed dishes from around the world.
Oh, I'd love that
bananas,
class.
Sambusas. What else did we have in that?
Samosas.
Stuffed vegetables, yes. So it was, it was an
empanadas, samosas, pierogies, yes. So many.
Dumplings.
Yeah, Afghan dumplings are part of that. Those are some of my favorite new foods that I've discovered through this program.
What kind of dumplings?
Afghan dumplings, aushak.
And mantu,
yeah. They're delicious.
Where are they from?
So that was one class that went over really well and I think was a good way to introduce people to multiple cuisines and multiple chefs and see some of the links between cuisine around the world. You know, we have a Sanctuary Kitchens run by a leadership team that's made up of staff, devoted volunteers, chefs in the program, and some City Seat board members, and decision-making and sort of strategy and planning are done on that team. So I was just going to mention one member of the team, Eduardo, who comes from Dominican Republic. He joined us a couple years ago, and he's just a good example because he's gone through sort of several different routes of working with Sanctuary Kitchen and with City Seed. So he started out teaching cooking classes with Sanctuary Kitchen. He led a cooking class in a community garden a couple summers ago. And then he joined our food business incubation, food business accelerator, and has since launched the Republic of Empanadas. So he makes sort of out-of-the-box empanadas, sourcing locally and selling at the farmers market. He's also now a member of our leadership team and sort of part of the decision-making group for Sanctuary Kitchen. So that's one example. Maya?
Yeah, another kind of one of our success stories is Amina from Syria. She and her family actually arrived on election day 2016. And her family has also been featured in the New York Times Welcome to a New America, I believe. It's a graphic novel column by Jake Halpern. And she joined Sanctuary Kitchen in 2017 and first did, several of our supper clubs and was also part of our pilot Food Business Accelerator program. And so after completing that program, she was able to launch her own catering business as well as join the Sanctuary Kitchen catering team to kind of get more experience with catering, learning the business end. And in the last year, she has really moved up in leadership. She's really talented, really creative and ambitious, and really wants to be successful. And she has put in 110% effort and is gaining the skills that she needs to really grow her own business as well as grow Sanctuary Kitchen.
So her business is called Ominous Kitchen for anyone in New Haven.
How do you spell Amina?
A-M-I-N-A-H.
Oh, I was right. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up.
Yeah. Run their own catering business. And then, like I said, she's gaining more experience through our catering program, and has really kind of taken on some leadership roles with us, and has also recently joined our leadership team.
Now, you've mentioned supper clubs a couple times. What's the supper club as opposed to the cooking class?
Sure, yeah. So the supper clubs are dinners that are that have been hosted by various community members in their homes, and we've also had a couple at some restaurants. And this is where we have about 15 to 20 guests attend and enjoy a traditional meal prepared by Sanctuary Kitchen chefs, and we've had dinners featuring Syrian food, Iraqi food, Afghan, Ghanaian, Sudanese food. And what's it's different than a catered dinner or a restaurant experience in that the chefs who prepare the food also join the table with the guests and eat the meal together. So it's a way for them to get to know each other while they're enjoying this like feast, basically. And then the second half is a facilitated conversation over dessert and tea and coffee, where the chefs are able to share a more detailed story of their journey to the United States. You know, why they left their homes, what that experience was like, and what their experience has been being resettled here in New Haven. And then it's a chance for the guests also to ask more pointed questions, for the chef to get to know the guests as well. So the conversation ranges from, you know, sometimes the horrible tragedies that these families have faced because of war, but also, you know, really lighthearted food memories of cooking with their families back home, their first experience tasting New Haven pizza, you know, what it's been like for their children to, you know, enter, you know, American public schools and so forth.
From your experience, have you found that they are finding it difficult? Or are their children welcomed, or is there, you know, kind of a stigma? Are they separated out? What kind of experience have most of them shared with you?
For the most part, it's been positive. We have to remember that no one willingly leaves their home unless they have no other choice. And, you know, all the families that we've worked with, I mean, they're all looking for safety and opportunities for education and a livelihood, just like everybody else. But for the most part, all of them have said that they have found New Haven and New Haven residents to be welcoming. Their children are adapting to the lifestyles here, learning English. The biggest challenge is language. They are taking classes. The children obviously learn faster. They are very happy and excited about opportunities for their children in education.
Yeah, so I just wanted to add on the language part. So one thing that we offer, because, you know, the biggest challenge to employment especially is language, and I think employment is one of the biggest issues that people raise as, you know, critical and something that's often hard to find when you're new in the city. So through Sanctuary Kitchen Catering, we offer a culinary ESL class for chefs who are participating, so English as a second language, but focused on culinary arts, and then also, you know, job training and eventually placement. So the catering program is only about a year old, but we're hoping that it can be used sort of as an apprenticeship with this extra support around language, and then eventually linking up those who want to move on to other jobs in the food industry.
Mm-hmm. And are there ingredients that you find hard to find here that the chefs need?
Actually, no. We have quite a few Middle Eastern, Indian, African grocery shops here,
and Latin American,
where they can mostly get all the ingredients that they need.
There's a few things that have had to be tweaked. Like for aushak, the Afghan dumplings, I think the type of leeks that go in the dumplings are a little bit different. And so they've, you know, the Afghan chefs have found something that works and tastes similar, but it's
Chinese leeks or
right, Chinese leeks instead of what they used in Afghanistan. But yeah, we're able to find everything so far to be able to make anything that they have brought to the table and wanted to put on a menu.
Yeah,
good. And how in the culinary traditions of the immigrants you're dealing with, how meat-centric versus vegetable-centric is the food from those countries?
I mean, Syrian food in particular, most of the meze is vegetarian. So any sort of appetizer dishes primarily are vegetarian. There's a lot of meat main dishes. But it's been pretty easy for us to accommodate orders that are vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free through the catering program.
It's definitely been a cultural experience for most of our chefs to create vegetarian-only meals. Even though a lot of the main dishes have meat, it's not necessarily like a main component. So, you know, it's not over like a steak and potatoes kind of meal. They're incorporated where meat is used to enhance flavor. And so when we talk to them about like, oh, can you leave meat out? They're like, well, you can, but it's not going to taste good. You know, so it's definitely, and it, for them, it is a little bit unusual to like not have any meat, especially when you're serving guests, because it's considered a, when you serve guests, you serve your best dishes, right? And most special dishes. But like Amelia said, a lot of the dishes, especially the sides and the appetizers, are naturally vegetarian.
Uh-huh. But you're able to accommodate, I would guess some of the meals you can't really accommodate vegetarians, but maybe some you can. How does that work if someone wants to participate and they don't eat meat?
We've actually never had any problems with any of our events having vegetarian options.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, there's such, and the cuisines are so broad. There's so many options and a lot of variety that where dishes are naturally don't contain meat or they can be adapted.
And when did the food business accelerator part of Sanctuary Kitchen start? And maybe you could tell us
the Food Business Accelerator
is
another program of City Seed. So we have three programs, Sanctuary Kitchen, Food Business Incubation, and then Farmers Market. But there's been a lot of interchange between chefs, refugee and immigrant chefs who are both incubating a business and or participating in Sanctuary Kitchen. But they started around the same time. So we built out our commercial kitchen in 2016. Sanctuary Kitchen was launched in 2017, and we've been piloting this Food Business Accelerator, which is an intensive training course for folks who want to start a food business over the past, this is our third year. Actually, applications are open right now until the end of the week for the next cohort.
And how many cohorts do you have typically in a
season? We have one per year. It's pretty intensive. Oh. So we accept about 10 to 15 businesses, you know, rising ventures per year. And, you know, it's a 12-week 12-week session culminating in a pitch day.
Uh-huh. Very cool. And 12 weeks is pretty manageable. I know I've heard of a lot of these other food business accelerators where it's a whole year, and it's, you know, a huge commitment time-wise, more difficult to make. So you shared with us Amina's, is that, am I saying it right? Amina's story.
Amina's Kitchen.
And also Eduardo's.
Eduardo's,
other,
Republic of Empanadas.
Right. Anyone else you want to share with us?
As far as businesses that have launched?
Yeah.
Kuwait.
Yeah. I mean, there's a number of businesses not necessarily run by refugees or immigrants, but you know, Kawit is a pop-up, a Filipino pop-up that's getting started now in New Haven. Hopefully we'll open a restaurant one day. We have Vegan Ahava, several vegan soul food catering companies or food trucks that have gotten started. SOPA, so a soup subscription that you can order delivery once a week. So SOPA New Haven. Oh, man, I don't want to leave anyone out.
does City Seed partner with other organizations? I know you mentioned, the tea tasting thing that you did. You worked with another organization. Can you share with us some of the partnerships that you have in New Haven?
Sure. So the Food Business Accelerator, we partner with Collab, which focuses on larger business incubation
beyond
food businesses in Connecticut. And then for our programming, Century Kitchen events, we've had various partnerships and collaborations. Earlier this month, we had a film screening of We Are Not Princesses, which is a film about Syrian women, refugee women who use theater to cope with the trauma that they've experienced. And that event was partnered with IRIS, Yale Theater Studies, University of New Haven, the Connecticut Humanities Fund. And it was a real well-attended event with a talk back with the film director. We've had pop-ups with Atticus Cafe in New Haven and 116 Crown, which is another restaurant.
We also have a lot of clients around New Haven, so Yale is definitely a big client of ours in terms of catering orders and events. So partnering with the Office of International Student Services, we usually carry out one or two events with them per year.
The various Yale colleges have invited Century Kitchen to come and do demos, discussions, cooking classes, dinners, especially the Council on Middle East Studies. We regularly partner with them on their lectures and films.
Right. And then just in the community, we have partners both around recruiting new participants, so organizations like Junta in Fairhaven, and then Unidad Latina en Acción, Latin American organizing groups, as well as IRIS, the Refugee Resettlement Organization, have been great partners in just referring interested people to us and also for carrying out joint events.
And then lastly, faith-based organizations, various churches, synagogues, community programs, and, city, like, community centers have also invited Sanctuary Kitchen to put on events in there with the congregation.
And where do you get most of your funding? I mean, is the catering able to, I'm sure that's a great revenue, but probably it's not enough to support you.
That is accurate.
Are you getting mostly grants?
So we're about a year into catering, and we're hoping that it will break even in early 2020. But right now, we are sustained by grant funding. So we're a 501c3 nonprofit, and about a third of our income is earned revenue, and then the rest is contributed support. So private foundations, state, federal, city level. Grants and funding and individuals. So we have a massive network of volunteers and supporters in and around New Haven, across Connecticut, in some cases the region. So, yeah, we're sustained by the community we work in, which is inspiring. Particularly the level of volunteerism in this community has been just really heartwarming, and, we feel very supported by the community.
Yeah, well, your mission is so beautiful and so needed, And like you said, I'm aware of other organizations doing similar work in other cities, and it's really beautiful to see this taking off because, as you said, food is what brings us all together. We all need to eat, and there's so many similarities, and the things that are different are really beautiful to celebrate as well. So it just seems like a win-win all the way around, and I want to thank you all both of you for the work you're doing. Maybe you can just quickly share, before we run out of time, share with everybody listening, you know, where they can find out more information and make a donation if they'd like.
Yeah, you can. Our website is sanctuarykitchen.org. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can learn about our events, how to get involved, whether you want to come to an event, whether you want to donate, whether you want to volunteer at any of our events. You know, Sanctuary Kitchen is successful because of our support and the participants. So we welcome everybody from all over to join us.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for joining me today. It's been so informative, and I love what you're doing, and I hope to maybe come to one of your events one of these days. And everyone out there who joined us for this past hour, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. See you all again next week, and have a great rest of the week. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.